The Wisconsin Badgers Journal Sentinel podcast joins you with a fun game to talk about. The Badger football team winning in triple overtime in Lafayette against Purdue. 47-44 was a wild one, and the Badgers, it's been a disappointing season, but even in that in the midst of that context, it was awfully fun watching the falling action of this game and then the overtime session. There was a time where it looked pretty clear Purdue was going to win. The Badgers scored two late touchdowns in the fourth quarter, and then Jonathan Taylor went to work in overtime, went to work throughout the game, had a monster game. It was a big win for the Badgers, the penultimate regular season game of the 2018 season. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Badgers podcast. We're going to check in with Jeff Patricus, who covers the Badgers, both the football and the basketball teams, for the Journal Sentinel. He's going to chat with us about his impressions from the game against Purdue, the dramatic victory for the Wisconsin Badgers. Also a little bit of basketball thrown in there. Wisconsin's basketball team getting a big win last week Tuesday, since our last podcast, over Xavier, an absolutely beautiful performance for Badgers, for the Badgers and their fans. It was another shining moment for Ethan Happ. He had a triple-double to open the year. He has continued some pretty massive production. But this will primarily, as always, focus on the Badger football team. Before we get to Mr. Patricus, let's go over what we saw in this game featuring the Boilermakers. The recap, sort of the play-by-play anyway, sort of, in that overtime, Purdue did take the ball first and scored. Rondale Moore, sensational freshman receiver for Purdue. He was a pretty big problem in the second half, and he'll be a big problem for everybody. That young secondary having a hard time keeping him in check, but he did catch a 15-yard touchdown pass to open up overtime. Jonathan Taylor had a run. It was just three plays later that the Badgers had retied the game. They then went ahead when Garrett Grosha capped off a two-play drive to take the touchdown lead, and Purdue, in a game of name that tune, needed only one play. It was a 25-yard touchdown pass to Isaac Zico from David Blau, who's one of the better quarterbacks in the Big Ten, and showed it, and that retied the game. But that's when the Badgers defense came up big. They were able to force a field goal. The defense not allowing much on the next sequence. Spencer Evans hits the 41-yard field goal, but that opens the door for the Badgers to win the game with a touchdown, and two plays later, that's exactly what they did. Jonathan Taylor scoring his third touchdown of the game. The Badgers get a walk-off winner, 47-44 in Lafayette, West Lafayette. Excellent showing for Jonathan Taylor. Holy smokes. 33 carries, 321 yards, three touchdowns. That's 9.7 yards per carry. He opened up the second half with an 80-yard touchdown run that I don't know if that's what you call swinging the tide, because, or turning the tide, because it certainly looked like the Boilermakers were going to win later in that second half. But it was certainly a big play for the Badgers at the time. You had Garrett Groshek running eight times for 39 yards and a touchdown. The running game without Tywan Deal. Tywan Deal was out with an injury, but the running game was still able to click significantly. 385 yards total rushing. In the passing game, Jack Cohn, interesting game for Jack Cohn, 16 of 24, 160 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. He looked shaky early, as he has looked in his time as the starter, filling in for the injured Alex Hornibrook, who was still out with a concussion. He has not been able to get out of the concussion protocol, but Jack Cohn winds up going looking pretty comfortable by the time the second half rolled around. I don't know if comfortable is necessarily the right word, but he did look a lot more confident and was able to keep that Badgers offense humming along, even as the rushing attack shouldered the majority of the load. You had AJ Taylor with five catches for 89 yards. That's impressive. 17 yards per catch. Danny Davis, four catches. Two of those were touchdowns, including this one-handed grab in the fourth quarter. This incredible one-handed grab that tied the game. That was four catches for 36 yards. Kendrick Pryor and Jake Ferguson each had a couple catches as well. The Badgers were able to keep it in check on the turnover front. They did not lose any turnovers, or rather they did. I think they did lose one fumble there, but that was still a much more improved showing. They've struggled in the turnovers department, and not today. So they were able to also to recover a fumble, and they didn't pick off a ball. David Blau throwing very well for Purdue. 31 of 48, 386 yards and four touchdowns. Mentioned Rondale Moore, nine catches, 114 yards, two touchdowns. But still, the Badgers are able to make just enough plays on defense to keep that from to stay in the game and force overtime. Andrew Van Ginkel was at the center of that. 10 solo tackles, two of them for loss. He forced a fumble. He had two sacks. He was exceptional. All 10 of his tackles, solo tackles. But TJ Edwards, 9 of his 10 were solo as well. A couple for loss. Ryan Connolly, 9 tackles, including 8 solo, 1 for loss. Fayon Hicks got a little dinged up in this game, but he made 6 tackles. I mean, the defense did have some playmakers, and those certainly, like I said, when you win a game in overtime, every play made counts for something. So the Badgers, they now turn their attention to Minnesota. They'll look to keep the Paul Bunyan's axe, and Minnesota has struggled at times this year pretty badly, so it should be a game the Badgers win at Camp Randall Stadium next Saturday, but obviously anything can happen. Let's talk more about this Purdue game. We'll be joined here by Jeff Patricus, beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, to get his thoughts on this game against the Boilermakers. Here's Jeff. And I am now joined by Jeff Patricus. He's the Badgers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He saw a pretty impressive game with the rest of us, the triple overtime win over Purdue. And let's start at overtime, because heading into that extra session, I was thinking, having watched the regulation, I wasn't sure that the Badgers defense was going to be able to stop Purdue at any point. Pretty confident the offense was going to be able to do some things, but I wasn't sure if they would get a stop, and then they did. What were you thinking going into the overtime? What did you think had to happen for the Badgers to pull that one out?
Well, first of all, I was a little bit surprised that they were able to wipe out that 14-point deficit. But they got two touchdown drives, and their defense actually made some plays to keep Purdue from grinding the clock down. I thought Wisconsin had a little bit of an edge because the ability to run the ball, and because if you look at Purdue in the red zone, end of the first half, they got held to a field goal attempt instead of a touchdown. And then when it was 24-13, and they were down to the 1 yard line, they couldn't punch it in, and they had to settle for a field goal. And as it turned out, once you got to the third overtime, they had to settle for that field goal, and their defense wasn't able to stop Taylor, and that turned out to be the difference in the game.
Yeah, Jonathan Taylor, over 300 yards rushing. I mean, just a vintage signature performance, really, from this guy. I'm curious of how he ranks to you in the running backs you've seen in Wisconsin. Melvin Gordon didn't necessarily get the yardage early in his career as a freshman, and of course Ron Dayne did, but where does Jonathan Taylor rank in your mind against some of the best running backs that Wisconsin has had?
He's almost two seasons in. I mean, if you look at who Melvin was sitting behind, it was Monty Ball and James White. Monty Ball, who turned out to be an NCAA record setter, James White, who's having a tremendous pro career. Dayne carried the offense in some ways similar at times, only they didn't even try to throw it back then in certain games. He's got to continue to, for example, one of the most impressive things against Purdue is he didn't fumble. I don't even think he came close to fumbling in that game, which has been a bugaboo for him. And Melvin can catch the ball out of the backfield. Corey Clement can catch the ball out of the backfield. So that is one area that Jonathan at some point would probably like to add to his repertoire, and they worked on it a lot in the spring and a little more in camp. Some practices he would catch it naturally, some he was really, really battling it. So that's still an area that, in terms of all-around back, that he needs to add. And plus, if you think about it, in college, he's not in there a lot as a blitz pickup guy. So that's something in terms of developing as an overall back to watch for as well.
Yeah, I wasn't sure with Tywan Deal out how that would impact Jonathan Taylor's snap count, certainly. And we saw them use a lot of Garrett Groshek. What did you think Deal's injury would do for their game plan, and did it play out the way you would have imagined?
You know what? I didn't think it would have that much of an impact, because I thought Chris James only got a handful of carries but ran hard. I think, 18 yards on 4 carries. And Groshek is a guy who's so valuable because he can do so many different things, whether it's catching passes, picking up blitzes, running out of the wildcat, running out of that shotgun formation, which he's really good at. Because if you catch the defense where they're thinking pass, and I think Wisconsin did that against Purdue a couple of times, he is really good. And his touchdown run was fantastic because it wasn't blocked completely cleanly near the goal line. And he just decided he was going airborne and scored in the overtime session.
There was a moment late in the game. It was 4th and inches deep in Wisconsin territory, and they did end up punting it back, playing it safe, giving Purdue one last chance to unbreak the tie at that point. But I was thought maybe they would go for it, given the way the running game was able to, you know, make hay pretty much all day long. What did you think in that moment? I mean, it was the percentages to go with the punt just to play it safe, and that might be sort of the MO of this coaching staff to do that, but it had to at least cross their mind. It was really close to a first down.
Yeah, I would have been surprised if they go. I would have been shocked if they gone for it, because first of all, if you get it, you still need to go a long way just to score. So what's the upside there? And the downside is game if you don't get it. So to me, the risk was much more significant than the potential reward.
They put it back in the hands of their defense. The defense came through in a big way. And pretty much, I mean, a game like that, you see the final score, you figure the defense was non-existent. But they did have some bright spots. And one of them was handling Rondale Moore in the first half, the, you know, sensational freshman receiver that Purdue has. In the second half, he got loose quite a bit and was able to make some noise. How do you feel like the secondary held up against Moore and against David Blau's passing attack in general?
Okay, I mean, you got there were four penalties on the corners, three interference, one for holding, too many missed tackles in the back end by safeties, by corners, some by linebackers. I think even Jim Leonard deep down knew that Purdue was really going to stress that defense. He talked about that Wednesday before the game, because what Purdue likes to do is they'll take shots down the field, which they did successfully when Wisconsin were going to press coverage, and they will attack you horizontally with crossers. And when Wisconsin would let their DBs play off a little bit, Purdue smartly said, okay, we'll take the short ones, and then you need to tackle us in space. There was one stretch, though, that it was when after Purdue had that 27-13 lead, I want to say they were able to hold Blau for about 4 of 11 for 40, between 40 and 50 yards. And that was what allowed them to get back in the game when it was 27-13. So they tacked a little bit better there. They got some pressure on him. He wasn't comfortable with his throws. And so that was a really nice stretch. But I'm not surprised they gave up a lot of yards. They gave up, I want to say, nine pass plays of more than 15 yards for about a 25-yard average on those nine. A lot of big chunks in that game.
Andrew Van Ginkel was certainly one of the bright spots. 10 tackles. I believe they were all solo. He forced a fumble, had a sack, a couple sacks, I think. We've done this in past episodes of the podcast where we talk about individual players, what their future might hold. So Andrew Van Ginkel, he's a guy similar to some of the other Badgers, where you could, I think, see him getting a chance in the NFL. Kind of unclear to me exactly how, if he'd get drafted, where he'd get drafted. What do you see in the future for Andrew Van Ginkel?
I think NFL scouts will really like him because he's big, he's athletic, he can move, he can put pressure on the passer. And if you run a, you know what, I think if you run a 3-4 or 4-3 or a hybrid, you know, there's so many situational packages that those guys run at that level and in the college level as well, that they will find a place for him because he's athletic. He could be an every down linebacker if they want. I mean, because he's been banged up for, you know, since the BYU game. He hasn't been fully healthy since he really turn that ankle against BYU, and you can see that the better he gets physically, his ability to track guys down, whether it's a quarterback or a running back. I mean, he had two big plays yesterday where he tracked the receiver down, punched the ball up from behind for a touchback, and then when it was 24-13, he didn't hold his contain, and the back ran around his side. But he still hustled, tracking down at the one, and Wisconsin was able to hold them to a field goal. He can make plays, and that's going to show up to scouts.
Yeah, we almost forget with the number of plays that happened late in the game. That play to force the touchback was early in the game. One of the biggest moments. That was a heck of a play. We saw on the other side of the ball, Jack Cohn. He maybe made, in my estimation, the worst play I've seen him make, where he took a sack as the Badgers were driving when he could have thrown the ball away. But it seemed like from that point forward, Jack Cohn was, oddly enough, a lot more comfortable. Clearly, it seems like this is the best game we've seen him play, even with the ups and downs. It feels like that could have been a switch-flipping moment for him. I mean, he looked so confident in the second half and overtime, and obviously the running game was carrying the load. But what did you see from Jack Cohn as that game wore on?
Well, first of all, on that play, yeah, I mean, They ran a bootleg. They tried to get, I want to say it was Luke Benshall, I think it was the tight end on that side, I just caught a flash of the number, who did not get out into the route so Cohn had no one to throw it to there. But you're outside the pocket, throw it away. Throw it out of bounds, past the line of scrimmage, through the back of the end zone past the line of scrimmage, you just don't take a sack there. And that, to me, that was one of just inexperience. And I had no problem with the play call because they've run a bootleg short yardage near the goal line countless times over the years. I mean, that's in their playbook. He got comfortable, not the entire second half and overtime, because he had his first two throws of the second half, A.J. Taylor and Groshek, and then he had five incompletions in a row. But from that point on, he had his last seven throws, 7 of 7, 70 yards, and the two scores to Davis. So he was, for whatever reason, much more poised, much more comfortable, particularly late, but also he looked sharp early against Purdue than he was at Penn State or even at Northwestern. And it's perhaps simply just, okay, I've got more reps under my belt. I feel more comfortable. Or maybe it was just something that he felt yesterday, but or Saturday, excuse me. But, yeah, that was a big step for him. But the one area he's got to improve on is third downs. I want to say they threw on seven third down chances yesterday, only converted one time. And coming into the game, 18 third down chances where he tried to throw, they had only converted three times in his two starts. So the team is struggling right now since the Michigan game converting third downs, but Jack has really got to pick that area up.
Yeah, it feels like there was kind of also a breakout game for his receivers. You mentioned Danny Davis with a couple scores. The one-handed catch to tie the game was incredible and certainly one of the highlights of the game. And, you know, one play that stuck out to me was the blocking downfield when Jonathan Taylor rattled off the 80-yard touchdown run. I think it was Kendrick Pryor who took on a couple guys to make sure Taylor had a clean path to the house. Did you see that as sort of a breakout moment for the receiving core as well?
I think it was they got a chance to make some plays. Taylor caught that one early, A.J. Taylor, on the first series, the 34-yarder down the seam on third down. Davis has been up and down this year. And again, I attribute that in part to the way the year started for him with the two-game suspension. And I'm sure he wanted to come back and make plays, and he probably pressed a little bit. And then you go from one quarterback to another. And you got to remember, Davis had a really good chemistry with Alex Hornibrook. Didn't have it so much with Cone. And if you look at it, how many of these receivers have really caught a lot of balls from Jack Cone in game before this year? None of them really. So it's taken a little bit of time. They had made plays before. And prior, you know, everyone, that was a hell of an effort on that play. But Davis was also blocking downfield on that. He held up his guy, which helped clean that side out. But Pryor's effort was tremendous. It reminded me of Quintez Cephas in 2016 against Penn State in the Big Ten title game when he just basically led Clement down the entire way down the left sideline and wouldn't let number three to get at him. So, and that's what you need. That's what you need for, you know, to turn a 20-yard run into a 67 or 80-yard run.
So you mentioned Alex Hornibrook. Concussions are this impossible thing to try to imagine how long that's going to take. But seems like the Badgers have been preparing every game as they're going to be Jack Cone games. I'm guessing that your suspicion is that the same would be true for this last game, for this Minnesota game, and then they reevaluate him for the bowl game. Does that make sense to you, or is there a chance we could see Alex Hornibrook soon?
Well, they don't know because it just depends if he clears the protocol. The last time, I think people, there's some confusion out there. People are still curious as to, well, who starts this last game and should they redshirt Jack Cone? The plan has always been the same. Hornibrook was the starter. Vandenboom was going to get mop-up time. They were going to try to redshirt Cone. Nothing has changed. If Hornibrook comes back and they can redshirt Cone, that's great. They can do that. But if Hornibrook doesn't start because he's not physically capable, they're not going to start Vandenboom and try to redshirt Cone. Cone is the guy if Hornibrook is not available. And as far as this week, I don't think they know yet. The last time we saw Alex was last either Wednesday or Thursday. He was working out after we did interviews. He was in the McLean Center throwing to someone. I don't know if it was one of the trainers or not, or managers, just in shorts and a T-shirt, because when you're in the protocol, you have to do physical activity, whether it's you start out riding a bike, you know, drop, and then you do work on drops and throws, because they need to see how you respond after that physical activity. And if you don't see symptoms, then you can ramp it up a little bit. But if you do see symptoms, they're like, no, you're not ready to go. So we'll find out this week. If he's not ready, it'll be Cone. If he is ready, you could see Hornibrook up there.
Speaking of injuries, a couple guys on the offensive line banged up, including David Edwards, not making the trip with the team. How do you feel like this? Anytime they run, you got a guy running for more than 300 yards. Seems like the offensive line probably had a pretty good game, but just from what you saw, John Dietzen, Logan Bruss in the lineup there, what did you think of how those guys did?
I thought Bruss was solid. I mean, the biggest issue for the line Saturday wasn't pass protection, wasn't run blocking, it was the pre-snap penalties.
Right.
It was just far too many of them, and they were able to overcome some of them, but you just can't have it. They know they can't have it. I'm beginning to wonder how much of it has to do with the different quarterback and the cadence, because you've seen more of them since Jack has taken over, and not using that as an excuse, and I'm not even sure if that's the reason, but when you see a jump in pre-snap penalties like that, and you have a change in quarterback, that might be one of the things to look at. It's just they have to get accustomed to something. But I thought Bruss was solid, and they split the time at left tackle with Van Lannen and Dietzen again. But the line did a great job because Purdue doesn't attack quarterbacks with a pass rush like Penn State does. Now, with its linemen, they go up after you with linebackers and that. But I thought, other than the bootleg, which is not on the line, that was on the quarterback, I thought they really gave him a clean pocket when he needed to throw the ball.
I'm assuming Connor Allen is pretty much the punter from here on out, having seen him the last few weeks, and that he's just basically bypassed Anthony Lottie for good on the depth chart. Is that still a competition, or is it pretty much Allen? Is Allen the guy pretty much going forward?
I wouldn't assume that at all. They compete every week, and the reason that Allen, they made the change was, if you remember, one of the things Anthony Lottie did really well, especially last year, was use the Aussie-style punt, which end-over-end kick, and would be able to put it out down inside the 15, inside the 10, and really pin teams deep. But I want to say it was the Michigan game where a couple times he put it in the end zone. And even if you put it in the end zone by just a couple yards, if your head coach says, okay, we're gonna punt, you're going to pin him, we're going to put our defense on the field in good position, and you don't do that and give the defense a chance and the ball starts at the 20, you're not doing your job. And they made the switch to Allen because he's pretty good at that. If you remember – I'm trying to remember what game it was. I don't know if it was Penn State or – no, it was the game before Penn State, where he had two punts and their fair catches both at the 8. So that's what they want out of that if they're going to try to put their defense in a good position. But Allen did not hit the ball well against Purdue. He had the one late in the game, the 50-yarder, where – but you asked me earlier, they could have gone for it on 4th and short. That really helped him because that was his best punt of the night. But he had a couple of them where he put the defense in a difficult situation. So – if they can have an open competition again, which they do every week, they look at both all the punters, and Lottie hits it better than Allen, it wouldn't surprise me if they make a change because Allen needs to hit the ball better, more consistently.
You tweeted out a link to a story from the Twin Cities about the Minnesota football program on Sunday night. It has not been a great season for the Golden Gophers. They showed okay on Saturday in a loss, but now comes this battle at the end of the regular season where the Badgers – The one thing they definitely still have going for them is they have held on to Paul Bunyan's axe for years. What do you see in this matchup? Is there a chance that Minnesota could steal this one back?
There's always a chance because you've got to remember Minnesota played really well at home against Purdue. Purdue was off that day, but Minnesota had a lot to do with that. There's some playmakers on that offense. They have a really outstanding defensive player, Blake Cashman, who led a 20 tackles against Northwestern. So they've got some guys who can make plays. Now, Wisconsin should be able to run the ball down their throats pretty consistently. I would expect that to be the case. I think Wisconsin would have to do what it has done in some of its Big Ten losses, and that's turn the ball over a lot. They turn the ball over against Northwestern, turn the ball over at Michigan, turn the ball over against Penn State. And they didn't turn the ball over against Purdue. Voila, they win. It's really not that complicated. So if they don't turn the ball over, they'll be fine. It's interesting, though, up in the Twin Cities, because if Minnesota doesn't go to a bowl, that's, back-to-back years. And I think the honeymoon for some is wearing off in part because there's a lack of productivity on the field, and in part because Fleck is, I want to call it an act, but it's not an act because that's the way he is. Like his enthusiasm and his cliches and always talking about how young they are, that'll be okay. It wears well when you're winning. When you're not winning, I think people aren't as receptive to it.
Before I ask you my customary basketball question, anything else from this football game that stood out to you? Any individual performance that you want to mention, or any position group that particularly played well?
Well, you know, we've covered the offensive line. I don't know that. You know, here's one thing. We mentioned Andrew Van Ginkel, and yes, all 10 of his tackles were solos. But Van Ginkel had 10, T.J. Edwards had 10, Conley had 9, for a total of 29. 27 of their 29 tackles were solos. Those guys did a great job when they were asked to bring a man down one-on-one. They did their jobs. I mean, that was those three guys are playing at an exceptionally high level. And I think, I want to say on on a sack by Van Ginkel, Zach Bourne flushed the quarterback Blau by just pancaking the tackle. I mean, he just bull rushed him in the backfield, put him on his back. So Zach Brown is really developing into a nice playmaker as well. And he's going to have to be the leader of that outside group next year.
Switching real quickly to basketball, we saw kind of a best-case scenario game last Tuesday when the Badgers went to Cincinnati, took on Xavier, and played exceptionally well in the Gavitt games. They followed that up with a win over Houston Baptist. Just kind of interested in your takeaways from these last couple games. We talked about Ethan Happ after he had the triple-double against Coppin State. He has not slowed down with a couple double-doubles. Seems like all the guys that the Badgers are counting on are looking pretty good early, particularly Demetric Trice. What stood out to you from these last couple?
Well, it's a nice team. It's a nice team with some potential. They, you know, he's got guys who can shoot. They share the basketball well. There's nobody worried about, I've got to get mine, including number 22, Happ, which is, it sets the tone, because if a guy who's capable, as he, you know, he really destroyed Xavier on the inside, they couldn't handle him. So if a guy who's capable of scoring 25, 30 points isn't worried about how many points he gets and is, you know, just comfortable kicking the ball out to open shooters, that sets the tone for everybody. That's why you're going to see a really unselfish team. They should be a better free throw shooting team than they were a year ago. They're taking care of the basketball better. When you get a lean forward back, you're going to have another shooter and offensive threat. And I would expect that to come sometime in early January. He seems to be on track. I haven't heard of any setbacks, and he was walking okay the other day at practice. So it'll be an interesting team to watch. But they go to the Bahamas. Their first game's against Stanford, which looks to be a solid team. They got in trouble at North Carolina when they went there, which is a lot of teams do. But I'm curious to see Xavier. Xavier goes to Maui this week, and I'm not sure how good that Xavier team's going to be. They took a lot of bad shots, and they didn't defend really well, and Wisconsin took advantage of it. So Wisconsin, the competition's going to ramp up down in the Bahamas. But I want to take another look at Xavier and see how they do in Maui.
He is Jeff Patricus, Badgers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He covers the Badger football team, the Badger basketball team, and he'll be back at Camp Randall Stadium when the Badgers take on Minnesota for Paul Bunyan's Axe on Saturday. Thanks again, Jeff. We'll talk with you again next week.
Okay, we'll talk to you later.
Thanks to Jeff for joining us. Now the Badgers turn their attention to the Minnesota Golden Gophers. That's a 2:30 p.m. kickoff at Camp Randall Stadium on Saturday. 14 times in a row, Wisconsin has won this matchup and held on to Paul Bunyan's axe. Pretty much lives at Camp Randall Stadium at this point. You have to go back to November 8th, 2003 to find the last time Minnesota defeated Wisconsin 37-34. It would be a shame with this Minnesota team struggling if this is the year that streak ends. Wisconsin obviously has not had the year that Badgers fans or Badgers players or coaches were hoping for and expecting, so it would definitely be a down note to lose the axe in this particular regular season finale, but the Badgers again will be favored to walk away with it once again. Badger basketball team is back in action Wednesday in the Bahamas. You heard Jeff mention that. That's the Battle for Atlantis tournament against Stanford. They would then face either Florida or Oklahoma in the second game. So chance to see some impressive programs. Team like Virginia would be an interesting matchup if the Badgers can work their way into the title game on Friday. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the Badgers will be playing in the Bahamas, and we get a chance to see just how good this team is. They started off awfully good here. Definitely took care of Houston Baptist in resounding fashion, that 96-59 win on Saturday, coming off that Tuesday win over Xavier, that 77-68 performance in the Gavitt games in Cincinnati, true road win, and the Badgers team looks like this is definitely going back to the tournament after that long streak of theirs was snapped last year. Very curious to see how they do in this holiday tournament. Hope you have a great Thanksgiving. If you're looking for things to do over your holiday, you should check out the other podcasts we have from the Journal Sentinel, the Journal Sentinel Badgers Badgers podcast, that's the one you're listening to. You can find us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. Feel free to leave a review and a rating. Let us know what you think of it. But you can also find the Milwaukee Bucks podcast that I do with Matt Velasquez. There's another team that's playing very well in Wisconsin sports. The Brewers podcast, we had a recent episode that landed Friday looking at the postseason awards, which of course included the National League MVP going to Christian Yelich, Craig Counsell finishing second in the Manager of the Year voting. We have that for you. Our Packers podcast, that one doesn't involve me, but we've got Tom Silverstein and Jim Ozarski. I know the fans are probably down on the Packers right now, but they're still alive and still fighting for a playoff spot. It is still within the realm of possibility, so you'll have to listen to those guys. They come at you a couple times a week, letting you know what's new with the Green Bay Packers. For Jeff Patricus, my name again is J.R. Radcliffe. Find me on Twitter at J.R. Radcliffe, J-R-R-A-D-C-L-I-F-F-E. Let me know what you think, and we will chat with you again next week. Thanks for tuning in.